Welcome to the 78th Monkey on My Back podcast. Contact us at momcast@gmail.com to leave comments and contributions. Tonight on the pod, we talk around our spinning orders, listen to the details of Nick's exciting trip to the Small Press Expo in London, and in this week's Spotlight, James discusses Rutu Modan's book, Exit Wounds. Momcast, the comic book podcast that wishes to be reincarnated as a photobombing squirrel. What?
Please explain.
No, finish the introduction.
Around the mic tonight are...
Hello, I'm James.
Right, you need to explain now.
Who are you?
I'm Jane.
Who are you?
Who are you?
I'm Nick.
Cool.
Hello, listener.
Hello, listener.
What? Photobombing squirrel? What?
I saw that picture of... Do you not remember the picture of the couple that are hiking in somewhere like Yosemite?
Sam.
They were hiking in his moustache. And they took a picture of themselves and they set the camera down on a timer. And right in the front of the shot is a squirrel.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Photobombers.
Hilarious.
But someone tweeted a series of hilarious animal photobombing pictures.
I think I saw that.
Yeah, I retweeted it. It was Catelyn Moran or something.
That's a really long sentence there in the middle. I stumbled over it a little bit.
Yeah, it is a long sentence, but you managed it. Well done.
Whoa, you didn't get a paper cut off that, did you?
I almost, because we're going to talk about...
I'm bored of it now.
Rutu Modan's book, Exit
Paper
Wounds.
Cuts.
But I almost said that I was going to talk about Rutu Modan's Exit Wounds, which I thought might make it sound like it's an entirely different thing I'm talking about.
Rutu Modan's Exit Wounds.
Yeah.
That's like Everything You Love Will Be Taken Away From You by Stephen King. I wrote about that. There's a short story called Everything That You Love Will Be Taken Away From You, and it's written by Stephen King. Okay. I post online. I've just read this story, and I really liked it. It's called Everything You Love Will Be Taken Away From You by Stephen King. And someone said, who wrote it? And they thought that the title of it was the whole thing. Because they were fucking idiots, and I hope they're dead.
I can't really comment. If you remember, I did that piece for Ryan for the Weekly Crisis, and I answered...
You answered the title.
And laboured over answering the title. I didn't get any trolley comments.
Did you get any comments?
No, I'm really upset.
Didn't I give in a comment?
If you did, all it would
be... Oh, you Cynthia. That's what it said.
Yeah. That's kind of a catchphrase now, though. That only works, with me and you. You're a catchphrase. You said Exit Wounds, and then I mentioned Paper Cuts, and I thought that you were going to get it confused and think it was called Paper Cuts. But it's unlike any one of the people round here to get the name of something so drastically confused as that.
Yes.
More on that later. What have you two been up to this week?
I've been mostly recovering from illnesses given to me by my daughter.
How do you know that they were given to her by you?
Because they incubate the stuff and then they do it to try and kill you. I have had, in the last week... a stinking cold and a dose of conjunctivitis.
The more you talk in one solid flow, the more phlegm starts to... That's terrible.
Good job. I'm not spotlighting anything this week.
What have you been up to, Jane?
I haven't finished moaning.
I was bored of it.
No, I finished.
We're having an office move at our place of work, and it's been quite stressful.
That's exciting.
I thought it was being fine.
Yes, if you're the first wave of peoples again, as James
Where are you moving? Are you moving away, or are you just moving to a different place in the same building?
A different place in the same location.
No, it's not that far then. Is it not just like in American soap operas or sitcoms or whatever, when someone loses the job, can you not just fit all in one box?
No, I have three boxes.
Three boxes?
Yes, I've been there for 5 years. I have an awful lot of stuff to take with me.
I saw you post photographs of the stuff earlier on today.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but it's possible that you could let some of that stuff go.
It's all been chucked.
I was very upset if I let my blue tack bunny go that was made for me a few years ago.
My fisherman went in the bin. He survived everything.
He had a... Who was it who used to make those?
It was a temporary member of staff called Ben.
Yes, he made lots of those paperclip models, yep. Didn't he? He was quite talented. It was temporary member of staff Sarah that made my bunny with its carrot.
Or most of my toys that I tweeted today were donated by temporary members of staff. Yeah. So
they were all keen on you, weren't they?
They were.
Yeah.
And they were Kinder Egg. No. Usually they'd buy me a Kinder Egg and then it'd be a toy from the Kinder Egg, yeah. But some of them would just give them to me.
They did it as a way to buy her favours.
No.
Yeah.
Did they get favours in return?
No.
Yeah. No.
Mine has been a week of double-teaming meals. It's very peculiar. I had two burgers on Saturday
in London. Is it acceptable to call the bread containment unit around a hamburger patty a bun?
Well, yeah, but you see, it's confusing because, strictly speaking, the beef burger describes the burger, the meat, yeah. But it also describes the whole collective unit, doesn't
beef,
it?
No, a beef burger's the patty, a hamburger is the whole deal. But it's either a beef burger and a bun, or a hamburger.
Oh, so I had two hamburgers. And then this week I have had, we had pizza one night, cool. And then my darling wife came back from the pub with her friends, and she brought like a whole leftover pizza leftover.
What are you going to talk about food for?
I don't know, because I'm a fucking idiot, frankly.
You are stupid, given how me and Jane usually react to this topic of conversation.
I've been very good, I haven't said anything.
You haven't. You're great.
Yeah.
I just wanted you to know that.
Thank you.
You're brilliant. I don't know if anyone really says it often enough.
I don't think we do. I don't think we compliment Jane enough.
I think among our listeners as well, Jane is the great unsung one. People don't really, she's just overlooked. People don't really notice her.
She's the heart and soul of this podcast, really.
Yeah, beating silently within a skeleton rib cage thing.
That's right.
And it's never lupus, James. It's never lupus.
It's postulant chest cavity. She is the golden beating heart.
What?
Oh, and I went to London. That's the chair. Just to clarify, that's the chair.
I went to London. That's just
I went to London solely so that I could call James an idiot down the phone.
Cheers for that. That was quite no, a
that's
moment.
Okay. And,
it's just James from the podcast. He's an idiot. Oh, that's really cheered me up today. Thank you for that.
Were you having a bad day?
Not particularly. I wasn't feeling particularly great, and I was getting a bit hacked off with how
I didn't
really feel like Red Dead Redemption resolved in the way I wanted it to.
Did you finish it?
I haven't gone down to Mexico yet, but the unhappy event has happened.
You haven't gone down to Mexico yet, so you're about a third of the way...
No, I've done all of the stuff that John Marsden does in Mexico.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Oh, but it's a real turn. It's confusing and brilliant.
It is, although...
But I still wanted to carry... Yeah, and I'm sure you mean.
I didn't realise that one would have to travel to Mexico for a conclusion, possibly. So I've like
a happy ending.
I was literally, you know, one of the characters is standing there looking at some stuff, literally sat in front of my TV. Is that fucking it? You are joking.
You didn't nearly cry. I nearly cried.
No, I was just angry because I thought this. I was just starting to enjoy this sequence of events that I was playing through, and you've stolen it from me and left me nothing else to do.
Do you not have any save games you can go back to?
I know. I always save the same one to stop me cheating.
It surprised me that suddenly I had gone beyond the point of... Anyway, we're saying too much.
Yeah.
I played Halo Reach at some point. Had I done that last week? I finished that. That's good. And I got the Grand Theft Auto extra content. You can have your Grand Theft Auto back. I got the special edition one with the Ballad of Gay Tony, which is fun.
I've played that. That's
and
good.
I haven't played the other one yet.
I've done them both, I think.
Mm, look at that. And my Halo Reach, I'm doing quite well on Halo Reach, I'm enjoying that.
Was it showing off, just because I'm a superior GTA player?
The Xbox Live, I found this before, when you buy extra content, the one thing that isn't entirely clear, when you buy like extra content and stuff, the process by which it gets added to your account isn't entirely transparent, it's a little bit confusing. So I bought the extra stuff for Halo Reach, and it kept sending me to go and buy the extra stuff, and I'm like, I bought it!
Yeah.
You Mickey Ficky motherfucker. Thing.
Motherfuffer.
Yeah. But then I was fairly strung out and tired this week, so that might have helped. And I've been growing stuff too.
Cannabis mostly.
Yeah.
Crack cocaine.
I don't even know how to grow crack cocaine.
Massive crack cocaine plants.
Nick has trimmed his moustache. You don't have the little hair.
Oh no, I don't have that. That was for the special. I will talk about it a little bit later. But yeah, good. I was spotting for Dave Monteith. at the London Small Press.
Was he doing some bench pressing, was it?
No, he was, I mean...
You can do it, David, come on, one more!
He was, they wanted him to host a panel, but he couldn't make it, so I ended up doing that. We'll talk a
bit
more about that.
You're a shit replacement compared to him.
I know.
They'd be better off asking me and Jane. We probably prep for it, wouldn't
they? Yeah.
We should talk about that later, James.
Yes, sorry. Okay.
So, Nick, what did you get from the comic book shop?
What did I get?
Yeah.
I got comics, James.
Did you?
Should we talk about comics?
You didn't buy any toys then?
No, I didn't buy any toys.
I really do need to buy Luke Skywalker in his Hoth outfit. Or it's just the X-Wing outfit, isn't it?
To go with your AT-AT.
My AT-AT. I need a
Can the modern snow speeders go through the legs of... I keep dropping my fucking comics.
I'm not sure I should buy one.
Oh, and I saw the final Being Human, Jane. I always remember to talk about it later, but oh my goodness.
I don't watch that. I watch Wonders of the Universe because it's more mind expanding than Being Human rubbish. I'm not a very good geek.
Sometimes he just opens his mouth and nonsense pours out of it, doesn't it? Oh yeah, I know Brian Cox as much. Dr. Brian Cox.
I do love
much,
Dr.
But,
Brian Cox.
Do you know which Brian Cox I prefer?
the
other one.
Totally two heads.
Yeah.
Where's Kej?
Is that your impersonation of Brian?
Where's Kej? He's been eaten by to alien. Shite.
But it was really good. I need to talk. I need to talk to Jane's partner about that at some point because we wanted to talk about Being Human. He asked me about what I thought of it, and I haven't had a chance to talk to him properly about it. It's not very interesting. Got 2000 AD, the end of the Judge Dredd story, served cold, was very good and satisfying. Thank you to...
That's been excellent.
Thank you to Al Ewing's
and Al Ewing
and John Higgins.
Who, possibly the nicest human being alive on the planet.
It doesn't really come through in the art. Presumably you've met him.
I did. I had a lovely experience with him. He was really, really nice.
I need to pick up. I need to find my other issues of 2000 because I'm not up to date on Chikara at all. I think I started saving it to read all at once and then just lost track.
Do you know, I said last time I wasn't enjoying it. I'm kind of, as it draws to a close, I'm kind of digging it a bit more.
I love the art, except that I don't. It's weird. It's kind of. I find it difficult to follow the story, but it's so pretty to look at. Flesh is peculiar because it's got that really retro art and quite a retro style of writing. I like the Tyrannosaurus with the bloody head, but except that the first thing, they keep talking about him having a head covered in gore, and I just assumed his head was in shadow.
Yeah.
For most of the...
I didn't parse that either.
Until they mention it. Oh, he's covered in gore. But it's alright. I mean, it's cowboy and stuff. It's quite a throwback story. I wasn't that fond of the Future Shock, but I shouldn't say too much about that because, you know, at some point I will actually hopefully send some to them, so I'm not going to badmouth them.
Thargus sends you a letter back going, oh, you didn't like that one, so you can F off.
Yeah, and Kingdom Finished, I never really know how to feel about that. It's quite pretty, but I just don't really follow it. But that's 2000 AD. Really nice cover, actually. Who did the cover, James?
I haven't got this week's.
I'm going to find it is a Henry Flint cover, but it looks a little bit like Brendan McCarthy.
I'm so deeply satisfied I started picking up 2000 AD again. I know we say it a lot, but I really, really am.
Invincible Iron Man by Matt Fraction, Salvador La Roca, Dr. Octopus is being an asshole. He'd be an airhole. It's alright, it's okay. It's pretty much the same story that's been plodding on for the last few months, and it's good, I think. I really sound impressed. But no, I mean, I'm enjoying it. It's just, there's not really much more to say beyond that.
Having surgery without anaesthetic, does it?
Yeah. Generation Hope number 5. It's actually my favourite issue of this so far. It's written by Kieran Gillen with art by Jamie McKelvey, who've worked quite a lot together. I think... I didn't really like Jamie McKelvey's art that much when he was doing Phonogram. I've said this before, but every new thing he does for Marvel, I think, is really good. And this is the first episode of Generation Hope where I didn't feel kind of dropped into the middle of a big story. It's the first single issue that really stands on its own. It's basically set with the... it's called the Daddy Issue, and it's set with Hope Summers, who is the leader of the team, trying to... they're on sort of... a rest between missions on Utopia, And so it's basically just about how everyone's sort of reacting to her being around and stuff. But there's quite a nice conversation between... I don't think I realised Professor X was in the Marvel Universe at the moment. I'd never really know what's going on with him, but there's a conversation between him and Magneto. And it's quite weird because they're all second-string characters now. They're not leading shit, yeah. Basically. Cyclops is in charge, Scott Summers is in charge. So that's quite good. White Queen's being grumpy in it. And there's some really nice... Even when I'm not entirely sure about Jamie McKelvey's...
Still all
yeah.
Kissy with it,
yeah. Even though I'm not entirely sure about Jamie McKelvey's White Queen, Frost, his Kitty Pryde is just lovely. And I love... I'm quite fond of Kitty Pryde.
When did she come back?
Oh. I don't... She's not whole. There's kind of... I didn't read the story where she came back, but she is. But she's not entirely whole,
unfortunately. See, I don't really follow... X-Men, but I've said before, I enjoyed the Morrison run, Whedon. I'm very pleased Kitty Pryde's back.
I love her. She's been my favourite forever. Yeah. And she's in, she's kind of in a sort of a spacesuit type thing, so there's obviously still something not quite right with her. But there was a one issue, I think, where they went and fetched her back. Still loving Amazing Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man 656 by Dan Slott and Marcos Martin. Marcos Martin's art is amazing. It makes it feel like something. The design of the way he designs things and the way his storytelling works makes you feel like you're reading something somehow other than one of the bread and butter books of the Marvel Universe. It's really classy.
Yeah, it's awesome stuff. Comic book art.
And Dan Slott's writing's really good. This is the second part of the story where Spider-Man decided that no one... It's called. It was a two-part story called No One Dies, following on from... is it Marlowe Jameson? Marla Jameson died recently in the Marvel Universe, Jonah Jameson's wife. And so it's the second part of that story. Jonah Jameson's character, the characterisation of him in this is really good as well. It's something like the... third Spider-Man outfit that I've seen in new Spider-Man outfit I've seen in recent issues, but there are some interesting things going on.
I can't see it because the light's shining on it, it's flaring.
It's a step on from the Tron style one that he had a few issues ago, but it's peculiar. Apparently his in another Spider-Man comic his spider sense has been kind of taken away. So in this issue he's having to suffer without it, and it turns out he used it for a lot more things than he really realised.
Yeah.
For example, like knowing where to shoot his webs. So, like, apparently the reason he always gets a piece of building that can support his weight is because of his spider sense. So you can probably guess that there's a bit of slapstick in the issue.
Yeah.
But it's really sort of... gritty writing, and Jonah Jameson's characterisation in it is brilliant. Really, really good. Are you alright?
Do you want some water?
Yes.
Make
it also available for later. Sorry about the coughing.
No, that's okay. I'm just worried about you, that's all.
I'm apologising again. Oh, no, you were nice to me, weren't you? Sorry.
Well, I'll take it back.
he wants a refund.
The third part of the five-part Ronin 5 series, written by Peter Milligan, with different artists on each issue. This week's, I think it's a five-week thing, this week is The Punisher. It's like a samurai version, a feudal Japan version of the character. The Punisher translates to this time... more directly than the Hulk and Daredevil did in previous issues. They've all been really good so far, but the art in this one by Lawrence Campbell, who I've never seen before, is just so good. He reminds me a lot of Tom Coker, who did the previous issue, but he's got a really sort of dirty line, which I really, really like. That sounds weird, doesn't it? Dirty
it sounds
line.
Rude.
I know what I mean. It's really, really nice art. The story of a man who comes back from war and finds his family like dead is kind of the Punisher, but it also fits with samurais perfectly well. Really lovely comic, really, really nice. I liked it a lot. And actually, it's worth noting that of the Marvel books I just talked about, Generation Hope is $2.99. So was the Ronin 5 book. Both Iron Man and The Amazing Spider-Man, which are kind of their staple books, are both at $3.99. And DC are making a real thing about their drawing the line at $2.99 thing. I picked up Zombie today because I saw a preview, I think, of it that was quite interesting. I'd never heard of it before.
Well, Fraser Irving, he's been doing one of the Bat books.
He did Batman and Robin for a bit as well. It's written by John Rosen. I'm not really sure what I've read of his before. With art, like fully painted or digitally painted art by Fraser Irving, who's got a really distinctive style. It's about a character called, people refer to him as Zombie, spelt with an X, that is, X-O-M-B-I. What's his actual name? David Kim. I don't know if it's a story that's happened in DC continuity recently. Zombie himself was created by Dwayne McDuffie for Milestone Media. Apparently, and there's actually a sort of this, but this issue is dedicated to Dwayne McDuffie. But I don't remember that original story. But basically, David Kim has kind of been transformed by this nanotechnology, that these nanomachines that have taken over his whole body. So he's pretty much indestructible. He can do all sorts of crazy science-y things with his powers, and he's kind of still very much seems to be finding his way with them. There's it's kind of peculiar. I haven't really quite got the measure of the I haven't quite got the measure of the world he occupies yet, but he seems to have been sort of recruited by this organisation. Which seems straight out of Grant Morrison's old Doom Patrol comics. Very, very weird. Could occupy that superhero world of the DC universe, but also has this kind of dark and surreal undertone. For example, two of the members of the team that he is in that gets sent to investigate this crime are nuns. Actually, they're all part of a religious order. One is called None of the Above, and I'm not entirely sure what her power is yet. Another one is called Nonetheless, and she shrinks down.
That's good.
And there's a Catholic girl as well, who is like this really sort of happy-go-lucky schoolgirly type, who has loads of weird powers and stuff. There's loads and loads of ideas in this book. The beginning of it kind of reads like one of the old like early 90s Swamp Thing or Hellblazer stories, though. There's like a bunch of weird events happening, and they're all like quite surreal and horrific. If you've read those comics, you'll know what I'm talking about, and if you haven't, that's going to sound particularly peculiar till you read this. And there's just some really solid weird ideas in this, one of which is on the final, like introduced in the final couple of pages, and so I'm not going to go into it. Beautiful looking, although sometimes more digitally painted than I like, but just really nicely written, really, really good comic.
I didn't see that when I was in there.
I don't know if
yesterday.
There were that many on the shelf. It's quite a distinct cover, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking I would have spotted it. But that sounds like something I would like.
Mm. Yes, if it's the sort of thing that you would like, it's probably the sort of thing that you would like, Jane.
So you've spoken to me, discussed what I like, and decided I like that.
Yeah, because you told me you think that's the sort of thing that you'd like, and that's generally a clue.
Yes, big clue. Yeah,
it looks very nice.
It is really nice.
You're thinking it. Cheers.
Yeah, thank you. Many thanks.
Can I have my comic back?
Yeah, I guess. So.
There's an advert for Being Human on the back of the page.
In America,
the UK one.
Oh, is it UK one?
But it's on BBC America. So it's the new season. So that's probably season three. It's a hell of a season.
In HD, we're available.
Yeah, it's a hell of a season, you guys, our American listeners. Hell of a season.
And I only don't like it because I'm a knuckle-dragging idiot and I'm a very bad geek.
It's a guilty pleasure, isn't it, being human?
Somebody said the other day, oh yes, I know it's rubbish, but
I
really love it. And I was like, I don't
rubbish.
Think it is. No, I mean, I know you didn't, but somebody said on Twitter the other day, and I said, it's not rubbish. It's like better than most other things on TV at the moment. So
I get very impatient with TV drama. If it's not stoner humour, I don't really care for it.
I don't see the point of a programme with vampires and werewolves in where they're not fighting each other.
Exactly.
That's not how I feel.
Yeah.
Do they
That's
have
how
teams?
David Wynn feels.
Do they have teams? Oh, don't get me drawn into being unpleasant
about
it.
It's not necessarily true
Sorry,
about
David.
Being human. Just the two
beaten.
Main characters aren't fighting each other.
No, they're kind of loved up. Well, they're not really loved up, that's not true.
Not with each other. Well, maybe with each other. I don't know.
What did you read this week, Jane?
Okay, I have a very odd comic that none of us would usually buy, which is Hack Slash.
James might
do,
because it's got babies in.
I think James might step in on that. I did buy this comic because we all know the cover artist.
Yes.
It's a friend of ours, Eamon O'Donoghue, who did... There are three covers, and his was one of the cover options.
It's spanky.
And I have to say, I do. It was my preference.
She's got long legs, and you can see her bottom.
Yeah.
But there's also blood and skulls and stuff.
It's very nice.
We're going to go and see a concert with him, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
very nice. What concert?
We're going to see Roger Waters.
Roger Waters did a
Are either of you going to have a new queue?
Yes.
I think Nicola's trying to get tickets.
What date are you going?
April the something. I'm sure our wives will coordinate.
I think they will. All going to end up not going together.
Yeah,
well,
maybe.
I've already got the tickets.
All right.
And you've already got your tickets.
Yeah, they're downstairs.
Well, we haven't got our tickets.
Well, you better get your tickets.
The one comic that I have ever written that got published was a copy of Eamon's comic, The Gatekeeper.
Oh.
We did the first issue together, and then he moved on to great things.
Yes.
And I started working in education. So it's very exciting. It's nice seeing his cover on there.
It is very nice to see his art on here. He is very talented, so it is nice to see it on quite a popular comic, even if it's not one we pick up. Could tell you about the story. Don't really understand what's going on. Lots of boobs, lots of bums.
It's the second
and
issue.
And disappearing bikinis.
Is that an actual thing? Is it part of the story that they disappear?
No, it is. Yeah, it's mentioned. There's this slasher. Not quite sure what they are. And she was dead, and now she's alive again. But she has acid for blood.
Does she kill? The acid
is kind of eroding her bikini.
Well, it will do.
Yeah.
Does she kill serial killers? Is that what she does?
The main character.
Yeah. Cassie Hatch.
She kills things that are bad.
Is she not able to get acid-proofed bikinis at all?
I don't know. I don't think she's looked into it. She's acid too busy resistant. Trying to kill people at the moment.
The Cassie Hatch is the lone survivor of an attack by a slasher called the Lunch Lady, a slasher that happened to be her mother. Now she travels the world with her monstrous partner and friend Vlad, hunting down and destroying slashers wherever they find them, it says.
It's really difficult for
previously
a lady, isn't it?
In Hack Slash.
It's hard enough, I guess, for a lady to find a bikini she likes. It's in the right size and the right style. Having to check like the pH balance of your bikini to see whether it's going to melt off you must be an added stress that most women don't really need in their lives.
Perhaps,
am I right, ladies?
You thought perhaps she'd be a bit more practical knowing that her clothes are going to erode away and wear more.
Milk bikini, maybe.
More clothes, I think.
Well, it's going to burn through it all anyway, isn't
it? Yeah, but, you know, a bikini, there's not much to start with. So you have to buy lots of bikinis all the time. Whereas more clothes, maybe not so much, not so frequently.
I think it'll work out even, to be honest with you.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman, James.
Yeah, giving all your love to just one man, I know.
It's written by Tim Seeley, with art by Daniel Lister, but you couldn't really follow it. This is the second issue, but it's been relaunched recently.
It has, yeah.
It's
the second issue. It's not something I'd usually pick up. It was a bit of a pulpy comic. James,
there's lots
nice.
Of the art.
That was a euphemism we agreed on.
The art's very energetic.
It is, yeah. And there's lots
and
of things
of
going
quite
on.
Nice.
It's quite fun. It's, you know,
it's very sexy.
Yeah, it is a sexy comic. You know, it's very nice. You get to see ladies' boobs and bums and everything else in there.
Wasn't there another pilot season comic out this week?
I don't know. I'm not following that anymore.
Oh.
That's inconsistent. Oh, I started up a standing order.
Ah, you finally started up a standing order.
Because I was actually in Food and Planet and the manager was getting a little bit like, you should just do it, and then filled out a form for me. And he said, you can add stuff every time you go in there. So I've done it. Yay!
Well done.
Thank you.
Bloody time.
Yeah, but now I'm scared to go to the counter in case I don't have anything and then look really silly because I don't have anything.
But add to
that. Oh, it's endless sources of neuroses doing something that, like, antisocial geeks have managed to do for the last 20 odd years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see why you'd have trouble.
Yeah, I manage it every week, so.
No, I just.
But then I've always got more shit than really
yeah,
I should
exactly.
to pick up.
I spent under £20 this week. That was quite exciting for me.
I can't remember the last sub £20 week I had. Well, this week, so I didn't pick any up at all.
Well, I picked up this, and this is it. And it cost £2.80.
Ooh.
And do you think you got your £2.80 worth out of that?
I think I did, yes.
Good, well,
it's nice having the extremist an Eamon O'Donoghue cover as well.
Yeah,
buy Eamon's cover because it's awesome.
I'm not sure, it doesn't actually tell you which cover B. He is cover B. Pick up cover B.
We order you to pick up cover B.
The one thing I did like about this comic is it has the character guy at the beginning, so you know who each person is and what they're doing and why they're doing it. So that's quite nice, but the story itself was just a bit like, what?
Say what?
Are we in a position of order anyone to do anything?
No.
You can order your baby to do something.
No, I can't.
You can order your dog to do something.
Oh, it has a backup story as well. What's the name of the backup story?
Jane has a boyfriend. They're normally quite pliable.
Hoax Hunters is the name of the backup story.
James, I don't want you to comment on this, but there's a crossover between Bomb Queen and Hack Slash coming out soon.
Cool.
Because you've judged Bomb Queen quite severely, having never read an issue, haven't you?
That's correct, I did. And you put me right, and you're right, I should read Bomb Queen. It just kind of, it looks like I might not like it.
James is a real self-loathing boob lover.
I'm a self-loathing pervert, is what I am. Because I find these pictures alluring, but I feel like I shouldn't be drawn to them in comics.
That Undying Love looks really good. That's being trailed in the Image comics.
That does look good.
Okay, well, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Stop shoving the boobs freely doing my head in.
What? The boobs?
Oh, stop it.
Well, had enough of that last night, Jane. On every single page.
I'm probably going to have to clear that up at some point.
I wonder if Jane's hyperventilating then would have been picked up by the microphone.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to actually have a nervous breakdown.
My daughter was trying to take your top off last night.
Yeah, she...
8-month-old daughter. She didn't know what she was doing.
And learn how to undo buttons.
The brilliant thing about your daughter is she has always tried to take girls' tops down, especially Jane's. But the fact that she has learned how to do buttons before learning how to really talk or anything else is testament to her desire to get at food.
Yes, that's true. She's her father's daughter.
She did it. She did it twice, and the second time, James's lovely wife was leaning past me to get something in front of me to get something. And she got complete eyeballs. I was
getting. You know, this is all going out live, right, Jane?
Yes, I know. Okay. I had to.
This is going out live.
But well, you know what I mean. It's all going
it's
on the
tiny
mic.
Radio.
No, because when the promise Scarlet couldn't. I had to still hold on to her, and you can't do up a button with one hand, so I kind of had to cover myself and not those buttons.
You could ask someone to help.
Let's see, I'm going to do it now.
Are you going to do it back up then?
Yeah, I'm going to do it back up. So it's undone now.
Okay.
Now I'm going to do it up with one
hand. Did you just have a little burp while you were saying that?
My shirt was a different material to yours. It was a little bit more...
This is quite a stiff hole.
Shiny.
Look, it's not up.
No...
It's
gone up, look.
The shirt was
different.
I did it in one hand, listener.
You managed with your stiff hole.
I'm not going to go into it, but yeah.
Big button, stiff hole, did it in one hand, no problem.
I have other things that might prevent me from doing that, though.
James, really don't say anything.
What, some sort of affliction?
Yes.
You could call it that.
Involuntary movements.
Some people could call that, yeah. Yes, it was a little bit hard to do up the button.
You've got a nervous tick when you're flashing your boobs at a baby. That makes it impossible for you to control your limbs.
I wasn't flashing.
Yeah,
baby.
You say that now.
There is literally nothing I can say. No. None of the things that I want to say right now are appropriate
anything.
At all.
He'll get it later, it's fine. Never mind.
Max Barnard, Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
Shut up, Lou. So, Miss Marvel. What? Well, today I was thinking, I thought to myself, gee, Marvel should have a prominent and unique female character in the same vein as Wonder Woman, independent of any male character and running their own successful title. What's the deal with that? Which led me to remembering Marvel's most successful and lengthy solo series about a woman in recent history, Miss Marvel by Brian Reed and various artists. For those who don't know, Miss Marvel is Carol Danvers, cosmic-powered superheroine and, among other things, a former spy agent, pilot, Avenger, former Avengers leader, and other groovy and amazing things. And in 2006, she was given her second ever ongoing series, something that lasted all the way up till 2010, telling tales of superheroics all centered around the idea of Miss Marvel wanting to fulfill fulfill her potential and to be the best of the best. Which is nothing if not a slightly positive message and goal for a prominent female superhero. And not to spoil too much, but her lengthy 4-year personal journey culminates in her deciding instead to follow the ideal life plan for any person. To simply be the best you can be. But that's all deliciously vague, so I'll just tell you to pick up some of the trades and move on to my main point. That of why Miss Marvel is, or rather had been, and should still be, Marvel's most prominent female character. See, Marvel don't exactly feed the market with solo ongoing series starring female characters. I mean, you could even say that they straight up avoid this stuff if you wanted to be ignorant of the hows and whys of it all. At present, I can count 2 series from Marvel that are both ongoing and about women in solo adventures, X-23 and Spider-Girl. Now, in theory, both of these characters could become the figureheads of the woman side of Marvel, and the current creative teams are putting out decent stuff that could present positive images to people who want decent female-led books. But, and it's a big but, so big that it's a booty, in fact. Oh, God. They are both very clearly male-based characters, with X-23 being Femme Wolverine and Spider-Girl being, well, that's a bit obvious. Though with the latter, she was originally far more independent of Spider-Man and such, but I digress. My point is that Miss Marvel, sure, was originally created as a female counterpart, but Captain Marvel has been dead for forever, and Miss Marvel has grown and developed past her original look and origin into an incredibly independent and powerful superheroine. And I've got to do that last bit again because I fucked up. Miss Marvel has grown and developed past her original look and origin into an incredibly independent and powerful superheroine. And, much like with Wonder Woman, this speaks to people. That she is her own person and not tied up in who inspired her or whatnot, she comes across as a much stronger character because of it. Sadly, since her ongoing series, she started fading into the background, hanging out with the rest of the New Avengers and absolutely nothing else. But I live in the hope that my vague ramblings and flawed reasoning resonates with at least one person who'll tell one person and so on and so forth until the obvious occurs to enough people for Marvel to actually give the character the push she deserves. Or nothing will happen and I've just rambled about a character I like for a few minutes. I'm gonna go cry for a few hours and listen to Funeral for a Friend and dye my hair black. I'm so deep. Hup dup dup.
Was there any comic news this week, James?
We do this weekend.
Well, you read the internet. I don't read the internet.
I really don't as much as I should.
Well, no, maybe you should read it.
I know that in comic-related news, the actor who played Batman's Alfred in the Tim Burton series of movies sadly passed away.
Aww. Did he?
He has, yes, he's very sadly passed away.
Saw that.
I think he had a very good innings, but that really doesn't.
Was he also a cricketer?
He was not a cricketer. Why do you always put me on the spot with the news? You're really freaking me out now.
I'm sorry.
We should have a theme tune for the news. That's what I was thinking.
No, because every time we decide to have a theme tune, James gets his songbook out.
That's good.
Darren Aronofsky exits the Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Because he was going to be spending too long out of the country, he said.
He will not direct Wolverine. I'm just reading Bleeding Cool now.
Which is interesting, because it means they
DC
haven't started filming it.
DC Comixology's retailer thing. Actually, I had to say, Comic Book Resources and Bleeding Cool. Shame on you for not having the story about the actor who played Alfred.
Yeah, shame on you.
Shame on you. Where's Jane gone?
I think she's gone to the toilet.
Okay, fair enough. You're going to need to go in a minute as well?
Yeah.
You're just going to go and queue up out there and leave
me
filling?
My bladder's been a mess these last few days.
You needed to go for a wee, didn't you, on the way home?
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with me.
We didn't get to see the wee dance.
I think I must be sickening for something.
Probably. Have you been near anything that would give you a water infection recently?
A water infection?
A water infection.
Can you get it from gardening?
Maybe, depends. Did you cut your finger on a thorn?
No.
Okay. What about from something else? I don't know. This cold is really eating my imagination. You're doing a really creepy wee dance.
And now Jane's not here to see it. And she won't listen back. So she will never know.
No, she won't listen back, no. We should take this opportunity to say what we like about her, really, because she doesn't listen to the podcast.
But we only really have nice things to say about her.
Well, she is the beating heart of the podcast, but I think she's vague.
I think you're the beating heart.
No, not really. I'm the diseased liver.
Eagle Awards are this week.
Yeah, of course, the noms are out. And,
who would you nominate?
I'm not going to tell you who I nominated.
Was there a podcast then, a thing?
No podcasts. Although SFX have got some podcast awards.
Oh, have they got some podcast awards? Who would you vote for on that?
Well, I think there's Geek Syndicate and Small Press Big Mouth.
Oh.
But because we're obsessed with Stace Whittle, I think we probably voted for Small Press Big Mouth.
She's good.
Yeah, she is good.
She is.
Shall I stop, or...?
No, you go on, we'll be all right.
I'm back in a second. I'm just going to the toilet.
Thanks for announcing that, Nick.
That's okay.
Your wee dance reminded me of something. He was doing his wee dance his chair. And I was remembering we were walking to work this morning and we saw a man with a very unusual relationship with his bicycle.
Oh, yeah.
There was a dude, he was listening to his personal stereo. I think probably he was listening to something sexy, such as a Serge Gainsbourg.
Maybe.
And he was gyrating in front of his bike like he was lovemaking.
He looked like he was being very affectionate towards his bike. I think perhaps he was just moving along to the beat and probably didn't realise.
While he was doing it, he was weeping and saying, "Why don't you look at me, Jury?"
Yeah, but bikes don't have any eyes, so...
They don't, exactly.
He should probably paint some on if he's that bothered about
it. He should, and some little red lips.
But where... No, never mind. That would be good, wouldn't it?
That would be really cool.
Personalise your bike.
That was, but yeah, no, Nick's wee dance reminded me of that. Well, we took an opportunity to say whatever we liked about you while you were in the toilet, because we said you're arrogant, you never listen back to the podcast. What would you like to say about Nick while he's in the toilet having a wee-wee?
I don't know. I don't know. What should I say?
Excuse me, I had a little burp there. Sorry. You should say how cross you were that he kept us waiting 15 minutes, 40 minutes to go.
Yes.
So we're really looking forward to DC releasing that series in the fall. Hi, Nick.
What's that?
Hello.
Right.
Series? Are you just making stuff up now?
Maybe.
Were you doing an Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop, pretending that you'd been... It's the chair.
Yeah.
That does that hissing noise.
I am being Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop, and I will, before the night is out, find those stolen bearer bonds.
Mm.
Are you going to stick a banana up a tailpipe?
Almost undoubtedly.
At the beginning of the podcast, Nick, you should do a disclosure saying that every hiss, unless specified, is the chair.
Well, I should not be so neurotic about it.
Because the microphone's got a bit...
Okay, we'll do a disclosure for that too. Let's just get everything out of the way at the beginning. You just seem so awkward every time you sit down.
It's this chair, it's really comfortable though. Except that it doesn't lock as well. You know how you can lean back in most chairs, but they lock. This one just doesn't, so I can't lean back.
Nick, can you talk about the small pressing you went?
Yes,
do you want me to? I just wanted to.
I carried more water.
To mention
than
that,
I was
that the Eagle Awards prompted an interesting discussion I was following on Twitter between people we know.
The newcomers bit was very strange.
Brian Lee O'Malley, wasn't it?
There's some guys nominated there who I think have got quite well established careers, which seems
and
a bit strange.
As annoying as it is. As annoying as it is for other people to see them get nominated, it must be weird for people who have been working for years to see that. It's like, well, does nothing I've done before count? Brian Lee O'Malley was one case.
They should call
Scott
it,
Pilgrim's five years old or something.
At the very least,
like
they should be calling it Breakout rather than...
Yeah.
But there was also some question of, was it the indie... What constitutes an indie comic? Because 2000Z was nominated for a couple of things, and it raised the discussion of what counts independent, really.
I'm quite uncomfortable, much as I love 2000AD, because of its distribution network, I'm kind of uncomfortable with it being called indie, because how many indie comics are carried on the shelves of W.H. Smith's?
Mm, exactly.
Well, you're right, actually. Yeah. That's a good point. But it's one of those weird things, isn't it? It's kind of a slightly meaningless thing. One thing that came up in a couple of conversations I had at the small press thing were that I have started wondering what it really means in the US anymore. Because years ago, Marvel and DC were mainstream and everything else was indie, which counted Dark Horse, Image, basically, and all of the little, even smaller things. Well, now that Dark Horse are like a fairly solidly established company, Omnipress have movie deals coming out of the thing, it's kind of slightly spurious. Marvel and DC were just there first.
That's
not
unique to the comic book industry either, though.
No, of course not.
If you look at music that had a vibrant indie scene in the 80s and 90s, there is no such thing as... And I think the means of distribution and production in terms of art, it's so much more... they're less expensive now. It's easier to set up a company and establish it maybe now.
Yeah.
Is that
the same? Well, you know, this is one of the things that came... Right, okay, so at the weekend I was at the... What's the full title of it? It's the...
I don't know, I didn't go.
Small Press Expo in London, I guess. Well, it's recently... It's replaced what... It's essentially replaced The Thing, which I went to last year. All of the reports I've read pretty much bear out my experience of it. All of the reports I've read from people who actually exhibited there sort of say that they were quite disappointed by the amount of traffic because it wasn't a particularly busy day, but that it was very cheap to get a table there and it was quite a good opportunity to sort of... The more social element of all being creators in one place and stuff like that sort of came through. I reckon it was a good show. It was at Goldsmiths College. But I wasn't really there as a punter. And that was quite a nice feeling because you know how weird I felt at Thought Bubble and stuff. It was actually nice having a proper purpose while I was there.
I bet you were swanning around like a right Bertie Big Bollocks, weren't you?
It was also peculiar because I did know a few people who are there now, which is a little bit strange. It's not a massive hall, although there are quite a few exhibitors there, but within reach of the doorway I could immediately see my friends Andrew Cheverton and Tim Keeble, who were there and sold quite a few copies of their hardcover of West, which is still a lovely book. You should go look for it. The Angry Candy website, there can't be many things that come up when you Google Angry Candy West.
But put safe search on just in case.
Of course. George Beeden also had quite a nice spot, I think. The orangutan guys, David Wynne and Ian Sharman were there. There were loads of people there. And I was there, I was invited.
Did I mention John, or is that for later?
John.
Scrivens.
Oh, yeah. No, well, he wasn't really. That was peculiar.
You fell in love with him, didn't you?
Well, I didn't really fall in love with him.
You looked like it on Twitter.
I was a bit mean to him.
Were you?
Yeah.
Why? Okay.
You're ruining the sequence of events.
Sorry.
Yeah. But no, and there was Len was there.
Bunny
comic person. There were lots of familiar faces there. Mark Ellaby was there. John Allison was there.
Is there a new Chloe Noonan out yet?
Number three. Actually, I should have reviewed that because it was really good. Yeah. I picked that up. Complex finished the Douglas Noble book.
That on your,
and that was really good. Sorry, guys, I should have reviewed those. They were really very, very good.
Both of them. Yeah.
Chloe Noonan was a lot of fun. Complex was a complicated finish to a complicated story. It was very good, though. And it was there was some real talent there. One thing that was quite interesting was that in contrast to The Thing, and a few people there actually said this, in contrast to The Thing and some of the other small press areas at other conventions I've been to, where there is a tendency for more avant-garde, for people to literally just scrawl something, do a few photocopies and then turn up. So the quality of art and storytelling has been quite low. And you know, it's the small press scene seems to be maturing a little bit now where there's actually quite a lot of quality. I think what happened was there were probably people who were really passionate for a really long time doing small press stuff. And then suddenly it became really easy to do. People had access to really cheap printing or whatever, so suddenly there was a lot of stuff and not all of it was very good, even just as late as last year at The Thing. Most of the stuff I saw there, like as I was walking around, was pretty high quality. The art was good, the production was quite good, and it all just looked quite cool, which is good.
It's Luke Patterson there. I picked up some stuff of his.
I don't know him.
He's got nice. I forget the name of it now, so I probably shouldn't have mentioned it.
I failed to talk to WJC again. Again. I know the Felbroke Press guys were there. I saw a couple of them, but I didn't see him.
And we still haven't picked up a copy of The Dandy to do a...
No, I looked, didn't I? I found a copy of it in W.H. Smith's, but I couldn't see his story in there.
I couldn't see his story
either. What was that for?
That's bad that we can't see his story.
The main reason I was there was partly because it was David's birthday the other week and partly because at the last minute the presenter on the orangutan panel, David Monteith, cancelled to do something that he had planned from before because he was never supposed to be doing the orangutan press thing.
Well, no, I think when he found out they might want him, he decided to go and have some dental surgery without pain relief rather than
This is kind of, I should clarify right now that David wasn't unreliable or anything. They were only considering asking him along. I'm sure he's very good. I feel like I've dug myself into a corner here with this.
Well, Jade and I were really happy for you that they invited you along.
The orangutan guys asked me along because they knew me from... Ian knows me from Elephant Words as well because he writes for that.
It's good.
Panel, and I got the wrong end of the stick through conversation with David and thought that I wouldn't have to do any preparation. It turns out I did have to do a bit of preparation, so it was a little bit embarrassing on my part. Yeah. The panel was really good.
Yeah.
There were other people there. It wasn't just the three of us in a room. That'd be weird.
On the panel.
It was just Ian and David and me presenting. Uh-huh. There were probably about half a dozen people in there, but which isn't loads, but there were questions and stuff, and it was nice.
Uh-huh.
It
was nice that the whole Momcast audience were all in the together.
John Scrivens was there, and I had never met him before. I always assumed he was older from his profile picture. He's such a youngster. And he's lovely.
Handsome man.
He's a very lovely man.
Did he show you his scar?
No, I didn't ask to look, actually.
John, if you're listening, I hope you don't mind when I meet you. I will ask to see your scar.
Ask to see your dinkle.
He made the unfortunate mistake of introducing himself to me before the panel and us getting a sort of a banter thing going. So at all of the points where my lack of preparation became really apparent and I felt awkward, I may have kind of taken it out on him as he was sitting
right there. Not only did you not invite me, you actually got another go-to idiot. So you basically treated him like you treat me. That's beautiful.
No, not exactly like I treat you.
Oh, man, I tell you, this is it. I'm not doing any more of these.
I've never groomed you. Never had to, frankly.
Exactly, yeah.
John, it's fine. You can report it to the police.
Show them on the doll.
Yep, and there are therapists that can help you through it.
And there are analysts.
Yeah, and James has got some good contacts, some support groups that he can get you in touch with.
Yes. But anyway, I think the panel went quite well. People asked questions.
Did you ask my questions? I gave you questions.
I did ask your questions. What were they again?
About the unicorns.
One was about unicorns, David said, because they're rubbish, or something like that. John Scrivens is actually planning on doing a comic about unicorns.
Yay.
The distribution question I did ask, what was it again? It was
about the trials and tribulations of getting their products onto the shelf of mainstream inadvertent covers, distributors, retailers like FP.
Ian's response was largely...
Was largely... What does that fat idiot know about anything? And then just laughed it off.
Yeah. No, his answer was actually that they don't try and get into those shops because you can't. It's really difficult to get into them. So there are a few places that do small press stuff.
Even if they were, it's especially graphic novels, a really crowded shelf space anyway.
Yeah. I incorrectly identified Hero 9-5 as an orangutan book because I just assumed it was for some reason.
It's Marcos.
Yeah. And also, when called upon to ask. ask Ian about the film adaptation that is potentially in the works of his main
FTL
primary series. I incorrectly identified it as Fallen Heroes when it's actually Alpha Gods.
Oh, Alpha Gods, of course.
Who's his Fallen Heroes? It's one of the Geek Syndicate guys.
It's Barry Nugent, yeah.
See, I just got really confused and flabbergasted. It was all very high pressure, so...
You jerk, Fallen Heroes.
I don't know what was wrong with me.
That's hilarious.
Did anybody say anything or laugh at you? Or were they all just a bit like...
Pretty much everyone did.
And did your phone ring in your pocket when I phoned you up?
It did, yeah. And we'd all taken the piss out of Ian for his phone going off a little bit beforehand. Right. So you really drew attention to me then. Yeah. It was fun though, and going out to the pub afterwards was really fun. There were a really good bunch of people there. There were some people in the room who weren't people we knew, and they asked questions as well. So that was nice. I don't know. I think it would be good if the place is either better at the thing is either better advertised, they have a slightly better website, or the place is better signposted, because it was a little bit difficult to find out anything about.
Did we say when we were talking about UK cons, that's a failing with a lot of UK cons, is they always seem to make themselves deliberately obscure.
Mm. Yeah, they kind of do. But it was nice talking to George in the pub, and also John Scriven stayed very late. I was at the train station with him. That was nice.
Aww. Was there kissing?
Not between us.
Okay.
I'm sure there were people kissing in London somewhere.
There's 16 million people there. There's bound to be at least two people.
This kissing. Excellent thing happened, and tell me how comfortable you'd be with this, right? Yeah. We it's in New Cross, yeah. I dare say it's probably not any that much rougher than any other like part of London around that particular part of London. Yeah. Not like really rough, but not particularly sort of gentrified either. We ended up in a pub. I can't remember which pub it was. It was interesting because they had a Thai food menu alongside the standard fare. It was full of locals though, and then the beer garden was pretty much dominated by small press people. You know, our sort of people. Sort of people who, en masse, probably feel perfectly comfortable in the beer garden of a local pub full of locals. But still, I was very aware that the local clientele may be a little bit more rough and ready than most of the people there.
Yeah.
And then a couple of the assorted worthies there on a table near us pulled out. It was either an acoustic guitar or a ukulele. I think it was an acoustic guitar.
Okay.
And started a little sing song. These are comic small press people.
Uh-huh.
Started a little sing song. That spread, and people kept... Can you imagine how I felt sitting at a table in a pub like that, thinking, yeah, this is what... I really want you to draw attention to us as a sort of...
That's one of those... That's why I wear hoodies, and the hood would have gone up, and the drawstrings would have gone in.
I'm maybe just a bit cynical and fearful of these things, but I just didn't want that much attention to be drawn. Yeah. And then they came to our table, and after being quite cynical about it, of course David and Ian joined in a rendition of Take On Me. Of course they did.
What a couple of hipster doofuses.
Yeah, it was a bit terrifying. I honestly thought I was going to get bottled or glassed.
I think you're possibly slightly more nervous than me in pubs. Yeah.
Normally. Yeah. Not normally, but I like to be in control of my own, how much attention is being drawn towards me.
I go one of two ways. I either cower in the corner or I become chest pushed out bristly Jones.
There's noisy, there's loud conversation that maybe singles you out, but especially men in a setting like that, your voice kind of changes so that you don't sound quite so middle. I mean, you sound like Ray Winston anyway, so this isn't really an issue for you, but you start to sound a little bit less like middle class in any pub anyway, the louder you get. The acoustic guitar kind of undercuts all of that though. And so on the one hand, I was quite preoccupied. I mean, it was very lovely. There's also something about an acoustic guitar played live and quite close to me that really cuts through me. The resonance makes me want to, the frequency it vibrates, that kind of makes me want get short of breath and want to cry.
Okay, so folk music's really good for you.
So not maybe not,
which is just, well, I don't know how you feel about sausages really.
But it was a really good it was a really good night though, a really good day and a really good night, and it was lovely to see everyone. And I'm really, I will prepare for the next panel. I didn't realise there was going to be, if I'm ever invited again.
And Jane and I are available for weddings, bar mitzvahs, christenings, funerals at a push, graduation parties, anything you want to invite us to do. We're prepared. Screw Nick.
We will prepare.
But not with Nick. We won't do it with Nick. Because he's going off doing his own thing, flying solo.
They asked. And you weren't going to go to London for his birthday anyway.
You didn't ask Jane whether she was going or not.
Well, I didn't think she'd want to go just with me.
Why wouldn't I want to go just with you, Nick?
Because...
David wins Yoko Kinono.
Is he? He's Yoko Flippin' Ono.
Yeah.
Oh.
F and Jeff.
Hello, my name is Timothy Swan. You once forgot my name. Prepare to die. Or be podcasted at. This week, I'd like to talk to you about two webcomics I feel are pushing back the boundaries of what it means to be a comic. I believe that webcomics are giving opportunities to try things that simply wouldn't, or possibly shouldn't, happen in print. Actually, I believe that storytelling, poetry, comics, and practically everything can be influenced positively by the internet in new directions. But this is a comics podcast, so I'm going to talk about Surviving the World and My Cardboard Life, two webcomics I've been reading in relatively recent times. Surviving the World at www.survivingtheworld.net, which I totally got wrong the first time I was looking it up, .net, is a photo webcomic that at first inspection looks like it doesn't need to be a comic at all. There's some text written on a blackboard, and writer Dante Shepard stands by the board. The text itself is usually a weird mix of philosophical, academic, and funny, but this could easily be done, you might think, as a blog, or a Twitter feed. That is until you start looking closer. In each picture, Dante is pulling a face, which is actually something he seems well suited to, being very expressive, or pulling a pose, or in some of the more recent strips, holding a prop. This all goes towards creating the character of someone akin to a mad scientist, who each time indulges us in the random, yet peculiarly sensible, things that he has to say. Each strip comes with a notation that would be alt text in another comic. Here it is where the notes you take from each lesson should be filed. Every so often there's a chance for readers to send in questions to be answered by the professor, as well as guest lectures and dog lectures from the punnily named German Shepherd. Who isn't a German Shepherd? It's a charming, clever, and different read that certainly hooked me. Whilst I imagine it might fit into that whole genre of science comics that XKCD is the great banner for, Abstruse Goose being another that comes to mind instantly, I think it does have something fresh and new to offer that I've not seen before or elsewhere. My Cardboard Life at www.mycardboardlife.com has a different sort of charm, in that it may well be the cutest webcomic, or comic, or thing, ever. Now, admittedly, I might be biased. I met Philippa Rice at the MCM Expo, and got to see her in action, selling, as she was, custom collages. As I cast this at your pod, I've got a collage of the comic's hero, Cardboard Colin, reading the first collection of My Cardboard Life, because clearly Inception has messed up my head, and what I wanted to see was a collage within a collage. Which I have. Nevertheless, My Cardboard Life concerns the day-to-day adventures of Cardboard Colin and Paper Pauline, as well as various of their family members and friends, Colin's many nieces and nephews made out of wrapping paper, or noted Lothario, Dr. Band-Aid, or Colin's puppy, or a polar bear made out of canvas. Most of the strips are a one-shot joke that has a curious twist, like a seeming dinosaur egg being a rock, that then gives birth to a rock, and often show an awareness of their collage medium. This, of course, leads to a whole load of jokes and moments simply impossible in any other comic. More recently, there have been some story strips, the adventures of crazy 80s stereotype business Pauline, dual-wielding Blackberries, doing anything to get enough coffee and enough business done in the day. Another one involving Colin posing as Whistling Horse, whilst Pauline becomes his ambitious manager. Everyone is beautifully crafted, up to the point of there existing a 3D diorama version that has been showed off on the website and at conventions, and uses a range of materials creatively alongside the cutesy, funny writing. What both these comics show is that the tool of a webcomic might just as well be a craft knife, or a camera, or a vast stock of raw materials, or a bit of chalk for the blackboard. When I was considering webcomics that had something especially different about them, these two were the first to leap into my mind. I wanted to talk about two comics that had seen the possibilities available in creating on the internet. They are by no means the only ones. Take a look at A Softer World, or MS Paint Adventures, or even something as straightforward as the recent People I Know episode by Timothy Winchester that had a hyperlink to Choose Your Own Adventure. With a medium that offers such interactivity, there are so many new directions for comics to move in. The other joy of the web is that creators are not especially bound by past conventions, or by particular companies, and thus have the chance to try ideas that are really adventurous. I really hope to have the chance to discover more unique ways of doing comics as people dare to try them out, thanks to the light side, the positive side of the internet. If I have enthused you, check them out, or else tell us all about some equally crazy and wonderful online publications. And if you do want to talk to me, try at TetrarchAngel, that's TetrarchAngel, on Twitter, or marvintheparanoid.deviantart.com, where you can find my poetry and short stories. And until next time, goodbye.
Have we got any more to talk about?
No, can I
do
just...
Do you want to do a spotlight?
Can I reassure David we haven't really fallen out?
No, we haven't. No,
I think he feels awful about
it, actually.
We still
love each other very much. We're mucking about... If I really felt it, I'm the sort of person I would just wouldn't be able to talk about it.
No.
I'd be just full of impotent rage.
He will look at you in a You're certain impotent, way just and keeps then coming up. Bounce off.
I'm not impotent, Nicola.
What happened there?
Oh, we're that's really interesting.
Getting somewhere now.
Paging Dr. Freud. Wow. When you say one thing and you fuck your mother.
You are going to be listening to this with your wife, and then there's going to be a point where everything goes quiet, and you just say, "I'm not impotent, Nicola," and she's going to wonder what the hell is going on.
I hope so. It would be even better if I'm naked, grinning
like you are now.
I edited a line out of that sentence. Yeah. If you heard that.
Nick just lit you up and down then when he said that.
He won't say anything. These trousers are quite loose.
Hmm. James put an image in my head before the podcast that I'm going to have trouble shaking.
Yeah.
So
I put something in your head.
That you I had. Did anyway. Or James?
James did.
Oh.
About the mirror.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that on the outtake, please?
I don't know. Don't think so. Yeah. I don't think any of that stuff's going there.
Keep
listening, listener, because there might be some really illuminating information. Exit Wounds by Drawtha Rutu Modan.
Uh-huh.
Who is a deputy editor of Israeli Mad.
Oh.
This, however, this book has very little in common with Mad. It's a story that's set in Israel. However, unlike How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less, this isn't really about the situation. However, the situation in Israel plays as a backdrop to a story really that's about interpersonal relationships between fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, dogs and cats,
sons and lovers, tears and sadness and happiness.
And it's published by Reg Grundy.
Jane does not know what the hell we're talking.
No, it's not. Is this a thing where I was born 10 years too late?
Sons and daughters, dear. I think is where we go. It's actually published by Jonathan Cape, and is an original graphic novel. And it follows the story of two young Israelis. They are Kobe, who is a young, lower-middle-class taxi driver, and Numi, very tall young lady who they call the giraffe, who's just coming out of her military service and is a member of a very, very wealthy family. And they are drawn together when Numi believes that Kobe's father, who she's been having a relationship with, she believes that he's been killed in a terrorist explosion.
Oh,
a bust up. As I say, that's a backdrop to it. It's never. It's quite strange, actually. So I think there's some real events because it's happened around the same time as a large explosion in Haifa. But this is Hadira that he's meant to have died, and the story follows her. Basically trying to uncover the truth about whether he died in that explosion or not. They travelled ahead to interview various people. There's a rather uncomfortable chapter where she tries to encourage Kobe to have a DNA test with a unidentified corpse from the explosion that's that's been buried in a non-Jewish part of cemetery. As this is happening, though, we learn more and more about Kobe's very difficult relationship with his father. And I don't know about you, it kind of chimed with me in a way that his father was loving yet absent in many ways. So from an outsider looking in, when you hear Numi talking to him about how his father used to talk about Kobe to her, it's quite clear he cared very much but was always unable to show it to his son. And this plays out, but it turns out as we go on he is actually quite a dysfunctional man that doesn't seem to be able to have a relationship with anyone that's very lasting or very meaningful. What's fascinating about this book is that the father looms large. He is a massive character, but at no point during the book does he appear. Which I like that
definitely.
As they travel from place to place, obviously, unsurprisingly, Kobe and Numi's relationship starts to grow and blossom. It turns out there's a very sweet scene where they're travelling to interview a woman who, it turns out, was having an affair with Kobe's father during the time he was seeing Numi, which obviously upsets her. But on a previous trip, Kobe had recounted a story to her where he, for his 13th birthday, he bought him a signed football T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget the name of the second team in Tel Aviv. But he's a fan of Hapoel Tel Aviv.
Mm-hmm.
And he bought him a signed jersey of their crosstown rivals. Which, as I say, it sort of illustrates that whilst he was thoughtful on one level, he was so disengaged with his son. That he completely bought him the wrong jersey. It turns out that Noomi, her father actually owns Hapoel Tel Aviv, and she gifts him a
really wealthy.
Yeah.
Hapoel, absolutely. Yeah, but they are a properly wealthy family. She feels very much an outsider. Her sister's very attractive. Her mother's very shallow. Noomi is a very tall, very gangly, very awkward girl that really doesn't fit in with the world that she's been born into. As I said, a really tender, really lovely relationship builds throughout the story, and as they get closer to finding out the truth about Kobe's father, so their relationship blossoms. Mm-hmm. And we have, towards the end of the book, one of my favourite ever sex scenes. Not only in a comic book, but in any book ever. It's so awkward and so uncomfortable. You can feel there's passion in the scene, but this sense of awkwardness that comes across is wonderful. And doesn't really spoil it, but there's a lovely moment during lovemaking. So awkward is Noomi. She whispers to him, "Oh, like father, like son."
Oh, no!
Brilliant.
Which, surprisingly enough, puts him off his stride.
Yeah, it would.
Yes.
It would inflame him all the more.
It might, God, yeah.
Depending on the situation.
Yeah, that my daddy really gets me going.
Thanks for concreting the comment I was making.
He storms off, but the they eventually find out that actually his father's remarried. But we never get to meet him. We get to hear about him. And he's always spoken about in the third person. We always have witnesses talking about his character. It sounds like a real arse, frankly, for this story. But the ending of the story, which obviously I won't talk about, but it, generally one of the most touching, heartfelt, moving endings to a comic book I think I've read. It's a really beautifully written little story about people's dysfunctional relationships with each other. It's a really fascinating study into that, played out against what is quite an interesting backdrop.
Quite an alien backdrop as well.
It is, yeah, absolutely, for myself. I think we're very used to... It's interesting reading stories like this, because we're quite used to the US being a backdrop, the UK or somewhere in Europe. But sort of Israel being backdrop, never really addressing the issues, but they play out in the background very subtly in subtext, which I really enjoy. It's an excellent book. I read it first, my God, I think almost a year ago now, and it's taken me this long to actually get around to talking about it on the pod, mostly because of Tintin, and mostly because I wanted to leave it a while to reread it, because I was really moved by it the first time I read it. I didn't really want to necessarily, I wanted a little bit of time to think about it. She does a lovely job. She's got a lovely... The art is a lovely clear line style that she uses.
Reminds me a bit of Hergé, actually. At times. The faces are quite similar.
It's very similar to early Hergé, but it's sort of... I want to say sparse. Sparing, I think, is probably more appropriate. The way she just lets it tell enough of the story, but her figure work, they're beautifully acted, the scenes. Just absolutely lovely, lovely piece of work. So, just a nice, well thought out piece of art, to be honest with you. It, in terms of the whole book, I can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, it's interesting in relation to the other book that was by an American.
Rutu Bynum is an Israeli, I should
say. Yeah, no, yes. The other book you were talking about the other week is by an American and is almost all about the cultural and political situation, but one that's written by the person who is there is just a story. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like that stuff is just life, you know, and you can't. Do you know what I mean?
I think there was times reading it the second time, I wasn't sure whether it was intended that the political situation should be. But at the end of the day, they're investigating a man's disappearance after a terrorist bombing. So I assume that that was a conscious decision to let that play out in the background and how it affects, you know, the people who live in... So I think I said last time, it's such a polarising argument.
Mm.
But actually, it's a situation that involves very ordinary people leading very ordinary lives, just trying to get on with the day-to-day business of living. You know, which actually, on a certain level, Exit Wounds illustrates really well.
Mm. That sounds really good. Yeah. I've got a copy of it. I love the cover. And
kind of twisted your arm into buying it, because there was a
copy. Did you? I like the cover anyway, so...
It is lovely. But it retails at $14.99 on cover. I imagine from Amazon, you'll get it somewhat cheaper.
Mm.
It really is well worth a read if you like nice,
subtle,
well-told stories.
And if you don't, what the...
If you don't, why are you listening to us? Because we're all about... Oh, no, maybe not. It's David Wynne. He may or may not be cross.
I wanted to talk to you today about Dwayne McDuffie. Now, Dwayne McDuffie was one of my favourite comic book writers, and it was very, very sad when he passed away recently. So I just thought I'd talk a little bit about what his work meant to me. And the thing for me is that Dwayne McDuffie was a man who should have been running a major comics company. He should have been an editor-in-chief, as far as I'm concerned. When I was a young comics reader in, probably my early teens, the thing that always used to excite me the most was contained superhero universes. I was a big fan of DC's Impact imprint. The early Image comics had that feeling to them. You know, that feeling of having the broad shared universe, but it being something that you can actually follow. The best example of that, the one that's always stuck with me, is Milestone. I've never seen it done better, I don't think. Milestone was four separate titles to start with, of Icon, Static, Hardware, and Blood Syndicate. And when it started, Hardware and Static were my favourites, but I grew to actually prefer Blood Syndicate. And they kind of covered all the bases of your classic superhero universe. You know, Static was very much your sort of Spider-Man character, your young man thrust into a superheroic lifestyle. Icon was Superman. He really was just a black Superman in many ways. And Hardware was very much sort of the Batman or Iron Man type archetype. And then Blood Syndicate was your X-Men, it was your team. But the twist there being that they were a street gang that acquired superpowers. But those comics were just so full of life and personality and so well written. They've really stuck with me. They're interesting takes on those archetypes and ideas. Hardware in particular, I always enjoyed because he wasn't always right, and was written as a bit of an arsehole, really, and would often find himself in a position where he had to completely rethink everything about what he was doing because he was doing the wrong thing. You know, Icon dealt with the idea of the all-powerful hero as role model and what that actually means and how standing up for certain values, when that butts up against real life and the things that real people have to deal with. You know, he had a teen sidekick, a female teen sidekick called Rocket, and she became pregnant as a teenager, and he had to deal with that. It was a wonderful sort of story. You can't imagine, can you imagine Superman having to deal with a Jimmy Olsen getting his girlfriend pregnant? I can't see that happening, can you? But it happened in Icon. You know, Static, we've seen Spider-Man have to deal with going to high school, not for a long time, admittedly, but we've seen various teen heroes over the years dealing with the same things. But an inner-city high school where kids were bringing guns to school, where, you know, having to deal with the expectation of being involved in that kind of thing when he doesn't want to be. And you know, a young black man who isn't from that kind of background, one of his best friends came out as gay, to be dealing with something like that was quite amazing. Blood Syndicate was incredible. When I talk about dealing with, you know, social issues and so on, imagine a street gang from The Wire. Imagine, if you've ever watched The Wire, imagine Barksdale Crew acquiring superpowers, and what that would mean. You know, what they would be like. You know, not necessarily becoming villains, but some of them were pretty bad people, and some of them were good people in hard circumstances who'd found themselves living bad lifestyles. It dealt with some very interesting and complex social issues. It dealt with issues of not just of race, but also class and you know, the issues in society that cause the existence of gangs. It was fantastic. And so ahead of its time, so forward-thinking. I don't think I've ever read anything like the Milestone books that was as good and dealt with the things that they did as well as they did. After doing something as amazing as that, and McDuffie wrote most of the Milestone books for as long as they were around, as well as basically running the line, he also wrote the bulk of the Justice League Unlimited and I think the first Justice League TV series, which again, one of the best takes on the DC superheroes and the DC universe that we've seen in the last couple of decades. You know, with outside of the mire of continuity and having to keep other people happy, he told the best stories. He did the best work, and the best work with those characters that we've seen. He was even partly responsible for quite possibly the most popular superhero fiction currently available, Ben 10. Ben 10, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best superhero things out there right now. It's squarely aimed at kids because it's superheroes. You can tell great stories for adults with superheroes, but they are a concept that is designed to appeal to children. And the fact that he worked on that, I think, speaks volumes. The man knew superheroes, and he knew how to tell good superhero stories. He knew what made them tick and what made them work and what they are for. Dwayne McDuffie, absolute great legend, and we should all mourn his passing, and we should all look to what he did and, you know, and learn from it.
So what's the plan for the oncoming week, you guys? What are you doing?
If it stays nice, I'm going to get into my garden. You've inspired me.
Have I?
If it's not, I'm going to sleep.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
You are really tired at the moment, aren't you? Yeah. And you're really under the weather.
Yeah, I don't feel at all well.
You poor man. Yeah. What are you doing, Jane?
I'm going to see Interpol tomorrow night at the O2 Academy in Bournemouth.
She has formerly, some information for me.
Yes, formerly the Opera House.
No. Is that where that is, what that was?
It's, yeah, it's now the O2 Academy in Bournemouth. If it's not Bournemouth, it's Boscombe. So.
I think the O2 Academy has a much nicer, more romantic ring to it than the Opera House. It's got like the O2 Academy, it's like a place in history that it defines, and I think that's good. I think more places should be named after brands that have bought them or sponsored.
Actually, when I was unable to sleep last night, I saw a bit of Amadeus.
Yeah?
That's quite a boobyish film, isn't it?
I think there's nudity. I haven't really seen it.
No, there is, I'm telling you.
I arrived home from London on Saturday to find my wife and the chap who is staying here at the moment watching Hard Target.
Let's call him The Lodger.
The Lodger. Yeah. Watching Hard Target. Okay. The classic Jean-Claude Van Damme vehicle directed by John Woo, and they had sat through almost the whole thing. My wife has never seen anything like this before. I can only imagine what was going on in her head while she was watching it. It would have been a revelation. She likes cheesy action movies, but she'd never seen a John Woo directed Jean-Claude Van Damme vehicle before. I imagine that. So you made me think of it because you said about Amadeus. In case you're wondering.
And that reminds me, we did have an entry to our competition.
Oh, yeah?
Let me remind you of the competition. Last week, Jane was shocked by something she saw in this room.
It's difficult to imagine after this week's podcast that it'd be possible to shock any of us.
But something shocked Jane in this room. We asked for a listener to send in either drawings or pictures of what they thought it could be that Jane had seen that shocked and amused her. so much. And the prize, I believe, was a jar of bacon A's, I'm going to draw you a Spider-Man, and maybe something else. I should point out that the very lovely contributor this week as well, Timothy Swan, did tweet me, but I forgot to tweet you back and tell you that the JPEG he sent me was dead, or the link was dead.
So that doesn't count.
So I haven't seen
Please
it yet.
Please resubmit. Everyone submit. What do you think I was looking at?
Yeah, to momcast@gmail.com. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm also going to be building furniture this weekend.
You are?
Yes, I had an IKEA trip
from scratch.
This week.
Oh no, from IKEA.
Jane's an artisan craftsperson.
In her spare time.
Some my absolute bargain bully bookcases because they're on IKEA family deal of the week.
They've got Billy on special offer.
Yes.
20 years ago and I've been down there to
share. We bought all of ours when it was full price.
It was a coincidence as well. I went there, I have an IKEA family card, and I squeed when I saw that the price was cheap and I saved £15.59.
High five, sister.
Thank you.
Well done.
Bloody blimey,
So I'll be building that at the weekend because I like to build furniture.
I actually find it quite therapeutic.
It is. Especially when you've got lots of the same thing. So once you've done one, then you sort of time yourself and see if you can do the ones quicker. So.
Are you going to attach yours to the wall? Because I tried that with these and it just pulled plaster out.
No.
Mine are attached to the wall.
Hmm?
Mine are attached to the wall.
I should have asked you for some help.
Yes.
I didn't know and it's too late now.
I've got a nickel. Have I mentioned I'm a parent? It's just with Scarlett. I don't want to pull a bookcase on herself.
No. Really, I don't know. Why would you want something like
that? The authorities really frown on that.
What are you doing, Nick?
My wife has a friend down. I'll probably busy myself in the garden. The friend's very lovely, but I'll leave them to giggle and have pyjama parties and make out and stuff. I don't think they're going to make out.
I'm coming up next this weekend.
I don't think they'll actually make out. I was talking to some colleagues about this today. My wife is lovely and wonderful in one regard, but it's also slightly frustrating in that she will check out girls and likes looking at them and stuff. But it never goes anywhere. She's never going to kiss them in front
Maybe
of me.
Maybe one day. You never know. Hope springs eternal, Nick.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you.
I'll probably get jealous, though. Yeah. You never know till you find out, do you?
Don't forget the competition, though, listener.
Yes, sorry. Don't forget the competition, which was... No, it's okay.
It's Wicks and Bacon A's by telling us what Jane was shocked and delighted by.
Delighted?
We've had at least one contribution today, haven't we?
Yes.
You'll have listened to that by now, listener, but thank you to our contributor.
Yes.
And, James, there isn't time. We're about to say goodbye.
All right, then.
Yeah. Okay.
Have a lovely week, listener.
Yes.
Have a lovely week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
It was a Sunday. A great rectangle of light projected on the bedroom wall gave way to the most beautiful place I'd ever seen, or so it seemed. As real as a dream, and you know the way a dream can seem more real than so-called real. That's how it feels. That's how it felt. I remembered the sky, so vivid, so bright. I remembered that gun, and at first it didn't seem to handle right. A bird in my sights, and down it fell. I felt bad for the bird, but I felt good about myself. I'd hardly known such remorse as when I killed my first horse. Tumbling down a mountainside, I could have cried. And I remembered the fear when the wolves first were near. How my belly went swoosh as we trembled on their hoof. Oh Lord, I miss Red Dead Redemption. Lord, I miss Red Dead Redemption. Lord, I miss Red Dead Redemption. Hunting. I've been the tall trees. Gazelles up and ran.
when they saw me. Boars, bears, the best was beavers. Scared every shoreline, morning, daytime, nighttime, till I found those blasted beavers. My girl got good at playing horseshoes, checking on all the stats, completing all the tasks. I never had to ask. Fun times. Sometimes I'd be sat right here on my desk just writing verses. My girl's next door riding horses. But of course all good things end. 96.6% completion when we moved the Xbox. Scratched the disc and that's where it stopped. And we got on with our lives. But sometimes when I'm outside I look up in the sky and I'm like, Lord, I miss Red Dead Redemption. 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 If it was a real place I used to live. Sometimes I look up in the sky and I see a bird, and my instinct is to shoot that bird. Splash of red and I can see it falling, and I'm right back there. I'm John Marston, riding my horse, trying to get back to my wife and son, helping people along the way.
Random than we usually are. I feel really lost in the middle of that Small Press Expo thing.
I don't think it helped that I had to sit here padding while you two pissed.
No, do you want me to delete that?
It depends how it sounds. I,